Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast, episode number 103. I'm Alex. Here with me this week is the Honorable Ben. How's it going, Ben?
Great.
And we've got, I'm glad you're good. I'm a little up and down, as are the Sharks. I think we got a lot to talk about this week. But first and foremost, I want to get something out of the way, Ben. I want to get Jumbo out of our lineup for this week, because that's pretty much what happened this week. Joe Thornton was put on injured reserve, basically, for swelling in his knee. The team said it was a minor concern, but that put him out of the lineup pretty much for the entire week. He can't come back, basically, until tomorrow. Today's Saturday, for those of you who don't know. Sunday, sorry. So he actually could be back today. I haven't checked this morning. But Ben, no Jumbo because of knee issues this early on. What do you make of it?
It's not good, Bob. it's not great. I mean, I think that,
you know, they said it was precautionary, but
they've said it's precautionary, but I think there's been word that it's an infection,
right?
And swelling in the knee. So I don't know if that's good. I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Typically, an infection's not great, Ben.
No, it's not great. I mean, it's probably better than the reconnecting of the ligaments and stuff, like coming apart or what have you. But yeah, an infection's not good. You can fight it with antibiotics, but you know where the source of infection is probably a big concern. So I think it plays into what we were saying over the summer, which is you can't predict how, you know, a guy with a knee injury like that is gonna do coming back. And Jumbo's a guy who was already back on the ice at the end of last season when he probably shouldn't have been, right? Trying to get back for the playoffs. And that probably didn't help healing or any of those matters. We tried to moderate expectations about what to see from him from the very beginning, what we would see from him. It took him most of the first half of last year to round into form without any infection in his knee.
Right. And that was with one good knee still working.
Yeah. Right. And so I think it's at this point, it's hard to even say what this is going to mean. He could be back. He's not back today, but he could be back, you know, come off IR right away. I don't expect that.
Yeah, I don't either.
We may not see him for weeks. He may be done. I mean, I don't want to be a downer, but like an infection is serious business.
Yeah, I don't think he's done. The thing that I found a little suspicious about, sort of the what was coming out of the Sharks camp is that, you know, it's not like he had surgery yesterday. I mean, you know, I'm not a doctor, obviously. I've had friends who have had similar knee surgeries to what he had. And, you know, typically when they've gotten an infection, some of them have, it's been pretty close to surgery, not, you know, several months later. So
right.
I don't necessarily know that I'm buying what the team is selling. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that I have any information that it's any worse than they're saying. For me, Ben, one of the things that I always find interesting, or at least I'm finding interesting now, as we move forward with this team, is the more Jumbo is out, the more excited is the wrong word because I love Jumbo, but the more enthralled I am with the team, because at some point we're not going to have Jumbo. And regardless of where Jumbo's health is right now or skill level is right now, when he's on the ice, the tempo of the game changes fairly dramatically. I mean, he is the guy who will quarterback the play, regardless of whether or not you feel like he should or shouldn't. And that I think is totally up for debate as well. But when he's not on the ice, what we're seeing is is what the team might look like literally without him on the ice. And considering how long he's been a staple and a leader on this team, you know, now we get to see what happens. You know, does Couture step up? Does, you know, where's Pavs? How are Meyer and the kids? So as, you know, devastating as this potentially is, or scary, I guess I should say, as this is, and disappointing, I'm still excited to watch the Sharks because I want to see all these kids step up and see where they go.
Yeah, and I don't think this team is a lot worse without Jumbo. Honestly, I think it's just different.
Yeah,
because as you say, what you're really saying, Alex, is that Jumbo is really slow, and he's played slower than he used to in this comeback. I felt
Yeah, yeah, but it's not just that he's slow, though. I mean, when you think of this, when you think of the way that he plays, or at least the way that he's been playing lately, and that is probably a large part the system's fault. You know, he wants to hold on to the puck. He basically wants to possess it. So regardless of what his speed is, I mean, I feel like even if he had speed, he'd still be skidding around in circles, holding on the puck, looking for that perfect pass. So either way, he's slowing down the pace in many respects of the game, especially in the offensive zone. So I don't necessarily think it's just his physical speed. I think that's something that he would do anyway.
Well, I mean, I think I'm saying it's even worse than it normally is what I'm trying to say, right? Like sure. Not only does it play to his proclivities for holding onto the puck and trying to find, as you say, the perfect pass, it's also, he's just not capable of keeping up with the play.
Sure.
I felt early on in this season. Sure. And so that changes entirely when you've got Rourke Chartier sort of in the lineup in his place, because Rourke is faster. And obviously he's not on the top line, but he's, you know, he's adding more speed to the lineup in general. And it's not like Pavs is super fast as he sort of takes that position of the, you know, top line center role. But that said, he's faster than Jumbo.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
and with you know, that, you know, the absence of Jumbo forced DeBoer to make some other changes. He brought Kane back up from the third line to pair with Pavelski, which was a very successful pairing at the end of last year, generally.
Right.
And I liked the, you know, that they brought Meyer up to kind of be another speed guy on that line too.
Yeah. No, so, I definitely agree.
So I mirror your, let's call it, excitement. For this, though, obviously, you know, I miss Jumbo. I want to see the Sharks win a cup with Jumbo on the line in the lineup.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see how fast he gets back and what he looks like when he's back on the ice. I know you're skeptical that this could be it for him, but you know, if it is another surgery to go in there and clean out the infection, we might not see him again this year.
Yeah. I'm going to be optimistic, Ben. But you know, I think, and we're going to talk about this, I'm sure, a lot this week. The Sharks seem to look okay without him, or about where we thought they would be, even if they had him. So for me, I'm still, you know, I'm where you are. I want to see Jumbo win a cup. I want to see him win a cup in the lineup. I want to see him win a cup with us. But I don't feel like, as of right now, his absence in any way is what has shaped sort of how this week played off. And let's talk about that.
I'd agree with you, mainly because, you know, while the top line was doing well with him in the lineup, in the same way it is without him, it's not like he was a key man on a ton of, you know, scoring plays and goals, right?
Right.
It's really going.
No, there's a little bit more going on here than just that.
But again, though, it was two games, so it's hard to say, right?
Well,
he got to play in two games.
Right. So. Well, you know, we're going to pretend like that's a gigantic sample size, Ben. Just don't tell anyone. Some people haven't been paying attention. I haven't told them how many games we played yet this week. It just totally ruined the podcast. God.
Well, no, I didn't say how many this week.
I wish Colin was here. Just kidding, Ben. Well, Colin, I do wish you were here.
We do.
We miss you, Colin. So I don't want to be the one to say I told you so, but we kind of told you so on this podcast in regards to the Sharks' start. You know, we all kind of had the same consensus, which is that this is a very good Sharks team. This is potentially a lethal Sharks team, but that based on a few factors, including sort of how the preseason was managed, that they were probably going to stumble out the gate a little bit as they figured out the system a little bit better, line combinations, which is something that still seems to be up and down in terms of, you know, definitely not locked in to the degree that you would hope early in the season. And here we are, kind of in that exact position right now. I know usually I give the standings at the end of the podcast, but let's do it early. Right now, the Sharks are literally just started playing a second ago, so we're going to cover today's game next week. But as of the start of this podcast, the Sharks are sitting fourth in the Pacific. They are 2-2-1. So, you know, again, just kind of hovering around that 500 mark. Yeah. And, you know, the weird thing about it is the stats are all over the place, right, Ben?
Well, it depends on what you mean by all over the place. This is a team that, given the stats they've piled up, probably could be 5-0-0 with a little more luck.
Right. The shots alone, regardless of whether or not you think they're quality, shots alone are just off the charts.
Yeah. Well, in pretty much each of the possession measures that folks like to look at. I mean, you could look at raw shots on goal, but that's misleading. That doesn't really give you a full measure of, you know, what's happening on the ice because of blocks and just missed shots or what have you. Then there's shot attempts, which is just, you know, if something looks like it was directed at the net, then you get credit for that. And then there's something called Fenwick where, you know, they look at those shot attempts, but they eliminate ones that were blocked because they think of those as like bad shots or good defensive plays or what have you. And, right. and in each of those measures, the Sharks are at the top of the league or very close to the top of the league.
Right.
And they've looked like a team that is, you know, putting the puck on net or putting the puck towards net at just really, really high rates, you know, dominating the offensive zone for large parts of each of the games that they've played.
Yeah.
And not because they're, you know, not because they are, you know, on the power play all the time. That, you know, mostly I like to look at the even strength stats to get a sense of where a team is, not, you know, not including either the power play or the penalty kill. Now, in that vein, the Sharks have been pretty bad on special teams.
Yeah.
in these games.
Bad.
And that's part of the reason why they are, we're 1-1-0 this week.
Yeah.
Or 1-1-1.
Let me ask you a question about that.
Yeah.
Given the pieces that they have, should they be? Because I think we both know the answer to that.
I mean, they should be great on the power play.
Exactly.
They're not really deploying the players where they should be deployed. Like
right.
the fact that Burns isn't in the Ovechkin spot is just the stupidest thing ever. You've got, yeah. you know, we talked about in the sort of leading into the season, you know, how are they going to deploy Carlson and Burns on the same power play when they both kind of play the same role?
Right.
Though I think you could say that Carlson is a little more open to passing than he is to shooting.
Yep.
Compared to Burns.
Right. Oh yeah. Well, right? I think everyone is compared to Burns.
Well, that's fair. But so far, when those two guys have been on the ice, they've looked unsure of who's supposed to be doing what, and they've both kind of, I felt, have taken the we're going to shoot from the point and hope against all odds that a puck will get through the layers of defense and what yeah. have you. And that's, again, like, not even talking about how bad the penalty kill has been in reality, not stats-wise. I don't know what the coaches are doing. I really don't. I don't know why they can't figure out that really Burns should be on one power play unit and Carlson on another.
I think it's just too tempting, right? I mean, think about it. Yeah. When we got Carlson, I guarantee yeah. you that 99% of the fan base and the media were like, oh, look at that power play when you get Burns and Carlson on it. So I think it's just, you know, here's the cookie jar. Do you stick your hand in it? Do you try to take the cookie? I don't know. You know, and they're getting caught with it. Honestly, like that's kind of the deal is you put the two on and positionally, they're not sure who's doing what yet.
Right. Exactly. And that's a failure of scheme and a failure of coaching.
Yeah.
And you know, coaching isn't just putting your five best players on one unit and praying, right? Right? Coaching is how do you take the five players and what they want to do and mesh them into a unit that works. Right.
Right.
The best coaches don't try to fit players into, you know, square pegs into a round hole. They try to figure out how to take those pegs and build a board in which each of them fits. But DeBoer's not a great coach, and his special teams guys are bad. Just period.
Yeah. You know what's weird is it's weird that they're still there, because at this point, special teams has continued to be a problem. I mean, it's not like this is a brand new thing this season. And this is a team that has really, really needed special teams. I mean, like, you know, if you think the playoffs last year or the playoffs, you know, before that, like basically special teams are kind of what are making breaking some of those games.
Yeah. And to that point, like we, I think, got the penalty kill looked good last year because
right.
it had a very good kill percentage.
Yeah.
That I think has led to some of the players on that penalty kill getting a reputation for being good penalty killers and continuing to play in the lineup when they're actually not good penalty kill players. They're just active penalty kill players
yeah.
and lucky penalty sure. kill players. This is something that the Fear the Finn guys, particularly Foul Ball 15, has looked at and, you know, examined in the last couple of weeks. The underlying numbers for the Sharks penalty kill is embarrassingly bad. Like they yeah. give up a ton of shots and a ton of high danger chances. And really it was goalie play last year that saved the Sharks bacon on the penalty kill.
Yeah. By the way, if you don't read Fear the Fin, it's fearthefin.com. That is another great Sharks resource, especially yeah. this year.
Yeah. And so if, if you, you know, just looked at the percentage, you might be fooled, like our coaching staff clearly has, into thinking that the Sharks are actually really good on special teams and they just have to get a little bit more time together. I don't think that's true. And, you know, this is, again, an argument before even Jumbo went down that I had for, you know, Melker probably, even though he's had a couple of good games early on, probably shouldn't be the guy who's in the lineup over some younger guys who are, I think, worth better looks or more looks. That said, that's not where we're headed. Rourke, Chartier, who I thought should have started the season on the fourth line only, is in because Jumbo has played. And I'm not going to, by the way, say that Chartier has lit the NHL on fire in his early starts, but he's looked good. He's done what is asked of him. And that's the sort of guy who should be getting time on the ice at the NHL level.
Right.
To get him to start developing. So,
yeah. Well, you know, Ben, we're phenomenal with development, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, we laugh about that all the time, and we joke about it. But the Sharks are not terrible at it.
They're certainly not the worst.
Timo Meier has made huge strides. Kevin LeBanc has made huge strides. I mean, we're going to talk about a game this weekend, which he had easily his best game as a pro.
Sure.
And you know, Tierney was making strides, and he's playing very well for Ottawa. DeMello. I mean, you could go on and on.
Well,
Joakim Ryan, you know, I just want to say, I think the Sharks' reputation for not developing young players is unfair.
Yeah. I mean, well, especially when you take a look at where they're usually drafting.
Right.
So it's not like they're taking top picks and blowing them, although they haven't had the best reputation with their higher picks, I would say. But they, you know, we talk about the diamond in the rough. We make cracks about that, but Sharks are not only pretty decent at hunting those down, be it through the draft or be it through at this point, you know, the Nordic leagues, but also taking those players and getting a lot out of them, and in some cases more than they should. And I would go back and argue that the Sharks have had plenty of cases like that where for players that were even, you know, shorter term. You know, Dimitrakos was not a particularly great player, but he did more in the Sharks than he seemed to do elsewhere. You know, they made Nolan Schaefer look real hot and traded him before anyone realized that he wasn't.
Yeah.
So, you know, they are pretty good at making lemonade out of maybe lemons is too harsh of a term. We'll say limes because those are delicious.
Sure.
But you know, for each one of those that, you know, just to point out the reason that people do, if you're just coming in now, the reason people do feel that way about the Sharks is because, you know, every now and then they have someone that they tout really highly and they rush in and it doesn't work out and that person's gone. And we saw that with, I wouldn't say he was rushed in, but, you know, Goldobin was maybe a case of that where the Sharks organization hyped the hell out of him. And then, you know, nada. And then who's our favorite one, Ben? Come on.
Mirko Mueller.
There you go, Mirko
Mueller. Yeah, they wrecked Mueller. I'm actually stunned he continues to get minutes for New Jersey, but he seems to be, I guess, all right. The Sharks never really figured out how to get him to play even particularly well at the AHL level.
Yeah.
Maybe it's one of those things where, you know, they say sometimes a guy just needs a change of scenery or somebody to get a fresh look at their skill set and figure out how to make them effective.
Yeah. You
know, good for the Devils if they figure that out.
Well, listen,
you know, I do want to just say is that, you know, you said the Sharks typically are picking in not great spots too. And so those guys who have recently not ended up being particularly good, we have to remember, you know, are not being picked in the top 10.
Right.
So,
yeah. Good luck, Sharks. That's a penalty for being good enough to maybe compete in the playoffs or Stanley Cup, but not going all the way, is that you don't get a cup and you don't get good draft picks.
Right.
Which is incredibly difficult. One thing I want to talk about real quick before we go into the games, because this is going to be a factor, and you started to touch on it earlier, Ben, is coaching. So for those of you who have never played hockey or don't completely understand hockey all the way, it is worth kind of pointing out, or I guess adding to what you were saying, Ben, as far as the coach's role on a team, because I feel like some people think a coach has more influence in the immediate moment to moment of the game, and some people feel like they have less. And the reality is it's kind of somewhere in between. You know, what you want out of a good coach is you want a coach who is going to employ the right system for the right pieces that he has, make sure those pieces are very clear on how to run the system and what the roles are within it, which is something that I think the Sharks right now are struggling with a little bit. Because really it's about the system and it's about the tactics. If you have great players and your tactics are flawed or your system's flawed, you're not going to get the most out of them. And on the other side, If you don't have good players, but you have a really good system, you know, I think that's, you know, a situation where you can get a little bit more. One of the coaches that I happen to like, not just because he just won a Stanley Cup, but because, you know, when he was coaching the Predators, he was getting a lot more than the players he had, was Barry Trotz, and his system was very, very clear. The other thing to keep in mind is, you know, game day management is a thing, and it is important in hockey. So, you know, while DeBoer is not necessarily responsible for whether the Sharks minute to minute are winning or losing, he is responsible for assembling those lines. He is responsible for managing those lines, and he is responsible for managing, you know, endurance essentially, or, you know, exhaustion, stuff like that. This is an area where, you know, an okay coach will do okay. You'll notice a really bad coach when they really struggle with it. Like, I'll give you a prime example, not just to crap all over our former coach, but Tom McClellan was afraid of timeouts, and he was particularly afraid of timeouts in crucial moments when the team was exhausted and needed a break or needed a shift in strategy or needed something. That's not good. There's also, I think, a misunderstanding with some fans as far as, you know, I know I have new hockey fans who ask me questions all the time. And one of them asked me last week, he was watching a telecast, and he was asking about home ice advantage, because I think Randy had mentioned it. And he was like, well, how is there home ice advantage? You're inside an arena. Aren't all arenas the same? And what he didn't understand was that the home team gets the last draw on lines. So that is a scenario where, in the moment to moment, you know, if you got a good coach, they're able to play that to their advantage and attempt to get line mismatches or short changes from the other team, which can completely screw up the game plan of the other team if done effectively. But again, those are things that, like, you know, I would say the system and the tactics are, you know, of more importance than the moment to moment. The moment to moment are still definitely important, but it's not like football per se, where the coach is calling out a play every 2 seconds and that is the success or failure of the game.
Yeah. And I mostly, you know, as you say, there's not a ton of stuff that a coach can do in game short of, you know, take a timeout and, you know, draw up a play in some very limited situations.
And roll the lines appropriately.
And roll the lines appropriately and put in the right line matchups, what have you. But I like to laugh because pretty much the only thing that DeBoer does in terms of quote unquote coaching, and I do mean not really coaching, is when he gets frustrated with what's going on the ice, he just starts to grind his lines.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Throwing line combinations at the wall and hoping, because it's not really strategy.
Yeah.
Hoping that somebody will get lucky and pump in a goal.
Well, let's be clear here, right? This is what I brought up in the preseason, and this is what concerned me, was the way that the Sharks used the preseason was rather in the last two or three games trying to figure out what those lines were going to be, they held veteran players out for the trip against the Flames, right? So that's one game down that you had to figure out your line combinations in an actual game scenario. It's different from practice, obviously. And then they were kind of rolling the lines all over the place in those last preseason games. So they didn't have enough time, or they didn't take the time properly to establish those. And as you see throughout, you know, these first couple of games, they're still figuring it out.
Yeah. And in practice is the time where those line combinations are getting used to working with each other and what their, you know, proclivities are and where they're going to be on the ice in some cases. Right. And so when you start just grinding mid game, you're putting guys who don't necessarily get a lot of time with the other guys and are going to make mistakes because they expect somebody to be in a place where they're not, or and on, right?
It's just, they don't understand the roles and responsibilities of that particular line, because you've taken, like, take the power play, for example, right now, when you've got Carlson and Burns on the same line, part of the problem is that Carlson and Burns want to be doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And they don't understand who should be doing what when.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, by the way, it's DeBoer's far from the only coach.
Yeah.
Quote unquote coach to grind his lines in particular situations. I mean, that was a thing that frustrated me to no end about McClellan when he was the Sharks coach.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of thing. Like,
well, McClellan's big issue was he basically, when he came in, took Detroit's system, we had the players to kind of make that work, and he made it work. And then he basically just did not adjust.
Right.
You know, he was trying, he didn't have the players, didn't matter. He was going to run that same system through the ground, whether or not it was going to ever be effective. And that's, you know, I think that's what probably led to his downfall and the collapse of the team. And that's also something, you know, while we talk about, you know, DeBoer and his coaching, it is worth mentioning that, you know, DeBoer does get a fair amount of, you know, praise and credit. I mean, he took a team that was coming off of what looked like an implosion.
Yeah.
An absolute, like, if you had told me the Sharks that following year were going to go to the Stanley Cup, I would have said you're high as a kite, not because of the players necessarily, but because of the state of the franchise that kind of McClellan had left it in. Took him to the Stanley Cup, and then
and that Wilson had played into by bringing in worthless fourth line goons too.
Oh yeah, 100%. But just the discord in the locker room was something that we had never seen Sharks fans before.
Well, and I think DeBoer gets a lot of credit for that. And my argument is, and in the sort of like coach versus talent vector, I think talent is far more important than coaching, generally speaking.
Well, he just figured out that he didn't have to screw it up.
Right. Exactly. He came in and he settled down. He settled down the.
Todd didn't do that.
No. Well, I don't think, at a certain point, Todd had been there so long, guys tune out a coach after a while. I didn't like McClellan that much through most of his tenure, but he'd earned his firing mainly just by age. He never changed his message. He never fixed anything. And you could tell that the locker room recognized that they were at a disadvantage on the ice. Right. So DeBoer comes in and he just, resets everything. He didn't really even have to do much. And the system didn't change that much, particularly on offense. Defensively, this changed a little bit to emphasize blocking and shot blocking.
He let the older guys rest a little bit and not grind themselves into dust before the season started.
And to his credit, he kept a lot the same, and in that first year, I felt like DeBoer actually did do a good job of what he's supposed to do: manage the personalities, manage the locker room, keep everybody on the same page, and build a system that supported, the players at that time. Right.
Right.
I'm not as convinced that he continues to do any of that particularly well at this point.
Right.
And hasn't really since the second year. And injuries have played a big part on the Sharks struggling over the last 2 years too. I mean, we can't ignore that. That said, he came in here with a reputation that young guys were not going to get a chance. He's played a little bit against type there, though guys who probably should get more chance certainly have not at times. And that's the bigger issue is, the Sharks, as you said at the beginning of this podcast, have to move past the jumbo era. And are they getting making the most progress towards that right now? Ultimately is the biggest question. That is in no way, shape, or form me saying I wish the Sharks had not re-signed Jumbo for this year.
Right.
But
I think it's important to understand what role he ought to occupy versus what role his legacy had, right? It's kind of along the same principle of how sports teams tend to sign players in general, right? You're rewarding them for past performance versus what their current performance is.
Right. And performance is gonna be. As an example, last year, there were two or three guys who we knew weren't going to be continuing with the team this year, Paul Martin, Joel Ward, and probably a couple of others who got way too much ice time.
Yeah.
And ice time at bad points. Anyway, we've talked a lot, not even gotten to the games yet.
You want to talk about the games? The game to the games. The Sharks open up a back-to-back. This was a little funky here, Ben. So their first game is against the Islanders. It was pretty early in the day.
10 a.m. on a Monday.
I was in the East Coast at this point, so it was really early.
10 a.m. On a Monday.
Yes, bizarro. There's something a little bit weird about this game, at least in my mind, Ben, and that is the choice of goaltenders to start, mainly because you've got a back-to-back situation. You and I are big advocates of splitting those with backup goalie, Dell being a completely serviceable backup goalie. We like Dell. And the Sharks playing the Islanders, who, not really expected to be particularly good this season with the loss of Tavares. So put Jones in maybe for a confidence builder. I don't know, but I don't think it worked out, Ben. Sharks ended up losing this one 4-0. And I want to make a couple of comments real quick.
Sure.
The first goal Anders Lee scored, a power play goal, kind of sucked mainly because Sorensen didn't have a stick and they took advantage of it. It was, I think a pass across right by him, nothing he could do. But Jones has to be better. And that's going to kind of be the theme of this game for me. And the theme of the season so far is Jones just has to be better. You can look at the second goal as like a deflect and go, right, that's tough. Okay, yeah, sure. And you can look at the third goal, which kind of had a Carlson Vlasic misread on Flipula, as far as, him basically just turning around them and passing it directly to Matt Martin, who was wide open, because that was a little bit of a brain fart. But in general, look, Jones has got to make these saves. And if he can't, And if the Sharks aren't smart enough at that point to then shuffle in Dell more, and if they do and Dell can't make the saves, that'll sink the Sharks' season. On defense, they've got to be better. In goaltending, they've got to be better. Because right now, the way I would look at it, Ben, is that the offense, other than maybe on the power play, the offense is doing stuff.
Yep.
It's the back end that's letting them down. And oddly, when you look at the roster, this roster is pretty stacked, but I think you would instinctively go, well, that defense is going to be great.
Yeah. And I don't know that I would put it on the quote unquote defense.
You're right.
Right. There's a difference between the defensemen and how they're playing and giving up goals, because there's lots of ways that pucks can end up in the back of the net that don't have to do with quote unquote the defense. Though, the root of a lot of goals against in those early games so far have been, Brent Burns doing the wrong thing at the wrong time, right, or Martin Jones just straight, not picking up a puck he really should have stopped.
Yeah.
And I do think that, that was the theme of this game. That we're talking about, the 4-0 loss, wasn't so much the Sharks not, doing what they needed to do in the offensive zone, but bounces going against them and just, Jones just not being good enough. Yeah. Now, I think everybody in the world knew that Jones was going to get this game, because that's what DeBoer does.
Right.
First game of a back-to-back, he sticks with his quote-unquote starter.
Regardless of the team,
and doesn't think about that matchup. And beyond that, sometimes, but not always, he then gives the next game to Dell.
Right.
Now, you should always split up your goalies on a back-to-back, period. The statistics, the analytics just say that you should do that. Goalies playing in a back-to-back perform much worse if they play the first game as well.
Yeah, period. And you don't want it. We deal with this fear every year. You don't want to burn out Jones before the playoffs.
Or tired guys get hurt too.
Yeah.
So that's something to be keeping an eye on as well. And we wondered, because Jones had not looked very good in the first three games of the season, whether he's playing with an injury again, like he did last year when he didn't look particularly good. I don't see any evidence of that, but he's certainly not been in top form.
That's us grabbing it at any sort of reasoning for him to, because he really, really, really has not looked sharp.
No, exactly. And he wasn't sharp in this game, and the Sharks didn't get the bounces, and they lost.
Yeah, they dominated in the faceoff, though. Hey, 61%.
Well, they got,
overall, they were stat wise, they seemed pretty good. It was just, except for the power play, 0-4.
Yeah, I mean, they had more high danger chances than the Islanders did. They didn't score any. They absolutely came away ahead in the shot clock, though. The first period was more even, than the rest of the game looked, as typically happens. You expect a team to be losing to win a possession battle, in the sense of getting more shots, because they have to push, right? They have to catch up. So they're going to, take chances they might not otherwise take. And that can lead to giving up additional goals if the puck goes against you and blah, blah, blah. Right.
Yeah.
So this isn't one of those games where I would argue you can tell for sure whether the Sharks actually outplayed.
Yeah, that's fair.
The team they're playing against, just only because, by the end of the second period, they're down one, and then it just goes off the rails from there as they start to try to tie things.
I think, again, it's grabbing for anything, Ben. It's the Islanders, You hope.
Yeah.
You hope it's just a bounce situation. You want to move on to the next game? Because the next game's a little more fun, I think.
Sure, let's do that.
I was actually in Philly and tried to get to the game. Couldn't, which was a disappointment to me, because, boy, did the Sharks ever crash Philly's home opener. With a score of 8-2, Logan Couture got the scoring going. It was a really nice play, 2-on-1. One of the things that really impressed me about this play, by the way, was Meyer. I think it was Meyer, if I recall correctly, tailing. So one of the things that the Sharks did exceptionally well this game that I don't think they've done particularly well in a while, was activating a third player, particularly on the turn, and then crashing the net after a shot. So regardless of whether or not Logan Couture had put that puck in, he was going to have two players right there for a rebound should there be one. And that was kind of the name of the game here, because the Flyers, for some illogical reason, especially with this Sharks lineup, as dangerous as they are across the board, could not help themselves. It could not stop pinching. And so yep. The Sharks would basically punish them on pretty much every pinch. Joe Pavelski would then score. And then that was 10 seconds later. So you got two goals right away. And by the way, that was a great shot by LeBanc to kind of set that up. But again, Pavs crashing, basically being right there. Evander Kane, Pavelski would score another one, sorry. And then Evander Kane would score. That'd be 4-0 in the first. Philly would come back with a goal of their own. But Evander Kane says, no, my friends. It's 5-1. And then, well, the third period basically just saw Hurdle, Meyer, and Barclay Goodrow all getting some fun and great goals. Boy, Meyer looked great. I really like Kane. In fact, we were actually talking about this offline. Kane, to me, is very exciting because when I think of all the players that the Sharks have had over the years, one of my favorite Sharks player, and I think it's fair to say most of the older fans' favorite player was Owen Nolan. Owen Nolan was a true power forward, especially back in that day. The NHL was obviously a little bit different.
Yep.
Very different in a lot of respects. But the fun thing about Owen Nolan was he was the guy who could shoot, he could handle, he could skate, and he was not afraid to hit something when the situation called. I mean, he was pretty much an ideal captain in that sense where, you know, you want to talk about a guy who could truly shift the momentum of a game at the drop of a hat. That was Owen Nolan. And for me, I know you still have a few qualms, especially in this era of the NHL where they're calling a lot more.
Well,
with Evander's aggression. But the thing for me is that, like, yes, he will lay on a stupid hit every now and then. And yes, he likes to hit a lot. But at the same time, man, you see him stick handle and you see some of the shots. This guy's fun.
So my issue with Evander Kane is not about anything he does between the whistles.
Sure.
Right? My issue with Kane is the stupid shit he does after the the play that is going to get called 1,000%. And he had some knuckle. I mean, honestly, you know, the two Flyers goals in this game were largely thanks to, Sharks mistakes and dumb penalties, etc. So
yeah,
it's topical to say that I really like Evander Kane, but I for the Sharks to be successful long-term, and as successful as they are capable of being talent wise, you can't be taking knuckleheaded penalties because, especially because the Sharks PK is bad. It's bad.
Yeah.
So don't do it.
And
it's not hard to, you know, to cut out the, I mean, one would imagine it's not hard to cut out the marginal shit that doesn't do you any good post whistle. But again, I largely don't understand how, teams or coaches can't figure out how to get a guy to stop doing dumb shit like this.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what.
Like, get a spray bottle.
You got a lot of extremely competitive, aggressive guys with hockey sticks on a slippery surface in a small amount of space going full throttle. You're going to get chippiness no matter what. But I totally hear what you're saying. What I like about it, though, is that I feel like, you know, not that he was a power forward, but I don't know if you remember the Timo Solani era, but that was a situation where you had a guy with a ton of skill who just would not do, he would avoid a hit at all costs,
right?
It felt like. And here you've got a guy who not only can hit with the best of them, but unlike, say, no offense, John Scott or Mike Brown, can actually back it up on the other side with the skill. And that is a great, great combination.
It's why I love Timo.
Yes, Timo's awesome as well.
But you'll notice
Timo rant go. I see where you're going, Ben.
What you'll notice is Timo doesn't do the post play shit that gets penalized.
Yes, of course.
Right?
Yeah.
I have no problem with the way Evander Kane plays. I've been incredibly impressed with Kane.
Yeah.
In the early going, but he has got to eliminate if the Sharks are you get into a short series in the playoffs,
yeah,
and all it takes is one backbreaking goal because he did something stupid or gets himself suspended like he did last year. You can't afford it. You have to coach it out of the guy.
Yeah.
And again, where I say DeBoer is not a good coach.
Yeah.
Because he enables shit like this. He does it with Burns all the time. Burns does some dumb bullshit at the blue line. And instead of, again, we don't know what's going on in the locker room. So maybe the message is being given in the locker room. But when then the public message is that guy is doing what we want him to do.
Yeah.
What do you think the guy's going to listen to?
Right. Right.
Do you think he's actually going to take the criticism to heart when you are pumping him up in the press? No. Why would he? Because he's hearing two different messages.
Can we talk about one other fun thing about this game? At least one.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it was a great game. I mean, the Sharks not only dominated this game in every facet, like they never let off the gas. And you know, partly that's Philly, right? As you said, Philly played a really piss poor game, particularly on the defensive side.
Look at this. Sharks had 48 shots. They were 2 for 5 on the power play.
Yeah.
I mean, that's awesome. And Ben, to kind of play off a theme from the last game, guess who was in goal?
Oh, it was Aaron Dell, wasn't it?
I know. I don't know. I didn't see anyone bring on any pitchforks saying start Dell, which is probably a good sign because you don't want that this early in the season.
Well, I'm putting the pitchfork aside so nobody sees it.
Yeah. So, and guess what? And you know what? Screw you, Gritty. We don't care. This was a great game for the Sharks. Super encouraging, especially coming off of that really depressing 4-0 loss against the Islanders, which I think none of us were hoping to experience.
Well, I mean, they were, you know, the Sharks succeeded here because not only did they pour shots on goal, but they also got into the dangerous areas a lot more than they had been getting. And they got bounces, right?
Yeah, right.
When, you know, Suomela put a puck off of the goalie's pad, there was a guy on the other end to actually put it home, or you know, LeBanc with his 4 assists. A couple of those were just off of shots, right?
Yeah. Oh man, Corsi, especially in the first period of this game, was great.
I mean, the Sharks just destroyed the Flyers on the ice.
Do you want to describe, because since we're starting the season again, do you want to describe Corsi real quick for those who are just hopping on? Because I know we have a lot of new listeners.
Sure. You know, you're going to hear Corsi used, you know, to talk about whether a team is great or not. And Corsi's just raw shot attempts. Again, a scorer is deciding whether, you know, a puck was shot, you know, close enough to the goal and wasn't intended to be a pass or what have you. And then they go, okay, that's a shot four, right? It doesn't even have to go on net.
Right.
And so, you know, overall, you know, teams are either good at putting more shots on the other team's net than go on their own, or they're not, right?
Right.
And in a given game, Corsi is meaningless. Right. In a given game, the shot totals are meaningless, right? Because you can get a lot of shots on goal and they're from bad areas. And so the puck doesn't go in. You can put bad shots on net and have them trickle in. Right. You know, that's where we say hockey is very much a game of bounces, because you just, you know, I think it was Wayne Gretzky said something like you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Right. And in that sense, he was trying to say, you should shoot the puck when you get a chance. And, you know, if you've ever been to a Sharks game and you've watched Jumbo kind of circle around the zone, you've heard Sharks fans just pray that somebody would shoot the puck.
I'll tell you what, right? Burns and Jumbo are like the yin and yang in that situation. Huh?
Exactly. Burns has never met a shot he didn't like.
Burns won't even look at the net. He doesn't know where it is. He just assumes it's in that general direction.
Exactly. So you might be wondering, now that I've described that Corsi is meaningless in a given game, why anybody talks about it and what it matters. The thing is that across a season, the teams that consistently put more pucks towards the net than go at their own net, right, manage to get shots off versus manage to suppress shots, it becomes predictive of success.
Right.
Right. And that's why the Sharks' shot totals are good, even as they're losing. Because the fact that the Sharks are getting lots of shot attempts, as long as you also then, you know, again, they're predictive, but they're not perfect, because you might ask yourself, well, then just put 5 guys at the blue line and just take tons of shots, and then you're like heroes.
That's right? What we do on the power play, right?
Yeah, kind of, unfortunately. And, you know, the answer to that is, well, yeah, you could do that, but what freaking idiot team is going to do that? Oh, right. Well, the Sharks on the power play, sort of.
Yeah.
Again, an argument for why Burns should be in the Ovechkin spot, right? Mm-hmm. But teams don't really do that. You don't see a lot of teams gaming Corsi to pile up shot attempts, because if you're putting bad shots on net, those shots go back the other way, right? Because they trickle out to a guy. Now you've got a rush and they get a shot on net or two or three themselves, right? It's right. It's self-defeating to try to take bad shots.
Yeah.
That's why it's predictive. Typically, right. When you have a team that has a very good, Corsi percentage, meaning, shot attempts over shots against, shot four over, it's predictive of success. It's not perfect, right? Because luck plays a big part in hockey.
Yeah.
Those bounces do matter.
Well, especially right now in this league where parity is so.
Yeah. And so to kind of round out, obviously sample size matters too, which is why I say it's not predictive in a single game, because you can have a Sharks team that is this good. They haven't yet, in six games, they haven't yet had this happen, but they can be horribly outshot.
Yeah.
And win or lose. Right. And actually I want to talk about the Ducks here, because the Ducks have been having success despite the fact that they're sort of like the anti-Sharks in some sense. Like, they've been outshot by almost double digits in almost every game they've played. And they've had a hot goalie keeping them in it.
Right.
The Sharks' lack of success is unsustainable if they're going to continue to play as well as they've played. And the right. Ducks' success is unsustainable if they're going to continue to play as poorly as they play, because those pucks will start getting past goalies on both ends in a long season. Anyway,
no.
I hope that answered the question you wanted me to answer.
It did. It took way longer than I thought you were going to take, but I realized that I asked you a question, Ben, and not Colin. Let's move on to the last game of the week.
Yep.
Or at least our week. The Sharks took on the Rangers. Boy, you want to talk about the shots on goals, Ben? Whew. Sharks outshoot the Rangers 43-27, but unfortunately, they don't walk away with the win. They did lose in overtime, so points. That's a shrugging points, because I still don't understand why the NHL does this. But the Sharks overall don't win.
They don't. And I've got a DeBoer rant again. If you
know. Well, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and take a coffee break. I'll be back in 15 minutes. Go.
Well, do you want to share other thoughts about this game before I do that?
No. I mean, I'm discouraged about this game, because this is again, we kind of called this, that the Sharks were still figuring things out, that they were probably, through at least the first 10 games, probably going to be around 500, and then we were hoping they were going to take off. What disappoints me about stuff like this is that this is a game that the Sharks, I know there's no gimmies. I know parity is great in the NHL, but push comes to shove, by the end of the season, the Sharks need to win these games, especially after the performance they had against Philly, where, don't get me wrong, I think Philly's coaching was playing that game incredibly stupidly. The Sharks, they need to win these games.
Yeah, and it's not just about the talent disparity, if that's kind of where you're thinking about here, because the Sharks were the better team on the ice. Start to finish, this game, if you look at the possession charts, looks almost exactly like the Philly game.
Yeah, except the final score.
Except for the final score and a few fewer high-danger chances. They gave up a few more high-danger chances. They played Dell a second time, which was, I think, the right call, because I think Dell had been the better goalie in what we'd seen of him.
Or because Jones is injured and they're just
because Jones is hurt. DeBoer was very quick to say, well, we totally planned to have
Dell?
We totally planned to have Dell play two games on this road trip, so we're just gonna put him in. Right. Not that there's an injury, not that, Jones has been disappointing, just, this was totally the plan. And Dell played pretty well in this game too. Everything here looks like what should have been a win in regulation. And, again, bounces didn't go entirely the Sharks' way. And there was a little bit more over-reliance on shots from the point compared to, the game in Philly where they got shots from better locations. And then beyond that, they decided in the third period that a one goal lead was enough to just sit back in their zone and, defend in layers, which is a totally prototypical.
How many times has that worked out in the Sharks?
Well, here's the thing. Unfortunately, in the Stanley Cup run year, it worked out a lot.
Yeah.
Not because it's a good strategy, but because they got lucky. Are we sensing a theme with things DeBoer does, that luck rather than process determines a lot of his decisions.
You don't say.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's so it was so bizarre.
So the Sharks spent the entire third period on their heels. And then, what do you know, with just, you know, minutes left in the period, the Rangers scored.
Yeah.
And we all kind of were like, yep, saw that coming from a mile away. Well done, DeBoer. Well done.
But how do you really feel, Ben?
Yeah.
I really don't have any other notes on this game. Do you?
Well, the OT was a cluster fark. It was bad, and everyone should feel bad.
I hope you guys are having a happy Sunday.
But the Sharks got a point. Wait, that's good, right?
Yeah. I always feel guilty about getting the loser point. I still prefer the era. I mean, I remember the era of ties. I don't have a problem with tie because yeah, if Cool State, if the rule, I know some American sports fans do, European sports fans don't seem to, because if the rule state, the team that wins is the team with the most number of goals at the end of regulation, and if if it's even that's explained in the rules, I don't understand what the problem is. But
hey, I'll tell you what,
the NHL felt like that would help drive people to not basically play for ties, and you can argue whether or not it did. It seems like the Sharks shorted. You know, they took their foot off the gas when they had a lead. So, no.
I will say one thing. An OT loss is way better than a shootout, period.
Oh, yeah. I don't
win or lose. So,
sorry. I know some people do. One out of every 20. I like a penalty shot. That is not the same thing.
Yeah, the shootout is terrible.
Not the same.
Line of fire.
Ben.
Yes.
3 stars of the week. Who are you giving them to?
All right. I think I will give my third star to Aaron Dell, because he came in and he, you know, gave the Sharks a real good performance. Actually, two pretty good performances. And, you know, unfortunately took an OT loss that was not entirely on him. I think I will give my second star to, that's hard because, you know, really the success was in one game and everybody went off.
And everyone was doing it.
Yeah. So I think I'll give my second star to Joe Pavelski because he did get a couple of goals this week. And, you know, it's important to get him going. And first star I'm going to give to Kevin LeBanc because he had probably the best game we've seen from him in that Philly game with his 4 assists. So.
Yeah, I'm going to give my third star. Yeah, usually this is difficult for me, Ben, when Colin isn't here, because you and I almost always agree. Right. And as much as you would think that'd be a blessing, it actually sucks. It actually makes it really, really difficult. I'm going to give my third star. I agree with you to Dell, especially since I would argue he's not the goaltender we deserve at the moment, but he's the goaltender that we have, and he's performing, which is great when, you know, Jones is struggling a little bit for whatever reason. Second star for me, pretty tricky, right? I think it's a two-way tie. I know it's a cop-out, but I agree with you on Joe Pavelski, and I think Joe Pavelski needs a lot of acknowledgement for his play, I think, in the Philly game. But also Timo Meier for me, I think. Even when he's not scoring goals, he's just really getting involved in the play. And again, he's part of that contingent of Sharks like Hurdle who are really getting, like, driving to the net and staying there. And speaking of driving to the net, my first star of the week is going to be Evander Kane, just because I really, really loved him in that Philly game. And like I said, I am still super excited about Kane. I'm jazzed that we have him on the roster because, quite frankly, I don't know what we would have if we didn't have him on the roster at this point, especially given the offseason.
Dylan Gambrell would be in, I guess.
Yeah, but I would take Kane over.
Yeah, oh, Gambrell. Well, yeah, no duh.
Listen, it's been a long podcast, Ben. Sorry, Colin, you missed one, but we'll have you back next week. The Sharks right now are playing the New Jersey Devils as we speak. In fact, it's 0-0, I think, after the end of the first game. As I mentioned before, they are sitting right now in fourth in the Pacific, but have no fear. Still really early, people. This week, the Sharks. So again, right now, they are playing the New Jersey Devils in New Jersey. Then they were back home against our dreaded nemesis that we struggled to beat, the Buffalo Sabres, but they're home. So there you go. I'm sure everyone will play up the Canes old team story, which shouldn't be a thing at all.
And also the Sharks can't beat the Sabres story.
I know. It's just bizarro. Although last year, last year. It's even worse in Buffalo. But yeah, so basically Devils in Buffalo, unless we decide to do the podcast again on Sunday, in which case, which I don't think we will.
No, I don't think we will either.
Yeah, there's on Saturday. But the Sharks are off of that road trip, which, you know, was a pretty up and down road trip. If you take it in general, it was the Kings. Sharks beat them 3-2. Then they lost 4-0 against the Islanders, and they played back to back and won 8-2 against the Flyers. And then they played and lost in overtime against the Rangers. And again, they're playing the Devils now. So back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes in the little podcast app. You can just look up Circling the Cup if you haven't figured that out already. You probably have. You can do the same on Android platforms. Android people, you're smart, and we still haven't looked up how to do it. So you figure it out. You're good. You can check us out on the web at circlingthecup.com if you want to listen to the podcast while you're at work. You can check us out, well, mostly Ben, out of Twitter at Circling the Cup. And you can check out our Facebook page, which I apologize for neglecting this week. I was traveling for work, people. Ben does not pay me enough for this podcast. Actually, none of us make any money. So if you want to throw us money, nah, don't throw us money. It's not-
yeah, we don't have a Patreon or anything. Yeah. So, I mean, you can throw money at me if you run into me at SAP Center, but I will
you have a higher likelihood of finding him in an X-Wing board game tournament.
It's true, actually.
Anyways, that Facebook link is facebook.com/circlingthecup. And of course, we do these things live, mostly on Friday nights at around 10, sometimes Sundays around 10 or 11, when Colin isn't around or we have to push. So feel free to check out any of those resources and hit us up and listen live. You can either write us live and we will answer. We do address things that get brought up. Or if you can't listen live and you got a question, shoot it to any one of those outlets. And I guarantee you that we will take a look at it. And if it makes sense to talk about, we will do our best to address it for you. That concludes our podcast. Colin, say ghost bye. Do you hear that? That was Colin.
I did. Wow, that's amazing. That's
creepy. And Ben, say bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.